So now that it's Pride Month, happy Pride, everybody.
Happy Pride. Everybody officially. Out
there. Officially, yeah. Happy Pride. First Pride Month episode. I'd like to just talk about a person that I has been on my mind since it started. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been on my mind since June 1st. He's been going through a really tough time recently.
Oh, a very tough time for
very,
sure.
Very, very tough time. His wife just left him.
Deservedly.
Deservedly. He kind of had that coming. Some things going on. And now that he's divorced and now that he's after recent admissions about how he's been fighting his bisexuality and he's had to fight those bisexual demons. I'm just praying for Steven Crowder right now, really.
Uh-huh.
I bet he's going to have to fight real hard this Pride now that he's single and the first time in forever.
Yeah, he's without a wife. He can't hide behind that.
Exactly.
He's basically admitted he's been bisexual before.
Uh-huh. And in college, and he's fighting demons.
If you put Pride Month, the words next to each other, spells demon in the middle.
Oh! So
he's fighting his demons, you know what I'm saying?
He's fighting really fucking hard right now. So I just want to say prayers up for Steven Crowder. You know what I'm saying? Hopefully they don't get him.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I believe in rehabilitation. Uh-huh. As a good leftist, of course.
Naturally.
I don't think we can fix him. He might be too far gone. But I'm willing to give him a chance.
Yeah.
Maybe we can get him just a little bit, just a smidge to the point where his audience is just a little bit less hateful.
After all, it is illegal to be straight now, so I think he's going to be having a tough time. Not that he has an option. His wife left.
And see, in honor of Pride Month, and in honor of our 100th episode, we commonly cover trans issues on this show,
exactly.
Issues related to being a member of the LGBTQ, just because of everything that the Republican Party is kind of doing against that community right now. But this episode, this week, we've decided to give you a break.
We decided
no
to give you
bad
a break.
LGBTQ
no,
news
no
this week.
No bad LGBT news. Only good gay news this week.
That's right.
You know, we're going to top off the show with just a little bit of a fun federal judge decision. A federal judge rejected the Tennessee drag show ban as unconstitutional.
See, yeah, that's good. That's good news.
So that's
for the
pretty
LGBT.
Sick because I think the Tennessee ban was the one where it's like no male female impersonators in public.
Was that you said that was the drag one that just got rejected?
Yep.
Now, of course, being a drag queen isn't inherently like LGBTQ. Obviously, people conflate these things all the time. But Republicans treat them as the same.
Exactly. It's a thing used by conservatives to shit on the whole community. And that was just ruled as unconstitutional. So, I mean, we know it's going to get appealed, but...
I'll vote to the Supreme Court, and there's going to be a federal drag ban.
Exactly. And then next year, when they drop those round of decisions, it's going to be no drag ever.
Yeah.
But not today. We're only talking about good gay news now, but unfortunately, that's it.
This episode is a refuge for you if you've been feeling down about being a member of the LGBTQ, of which many of our audience members are. So this episode's only good news for you.
That's right.
Bad news generally.
Well, only good news for that aspect.
That aspect of your identity. Yeah, exactly.
And, next week, though, not so much.
You know, speaking of good news for our LGBTQ audience members, or just really anyone that's on the left in this country, I'd be remiss if I did not mention that tomorrow is the anniversary of Ronald Reagan's death. 19th anniversary, I believe. So
how timely.
I hate him.
Pride.
Yeah, exactly.
So good, bro.
Right on during Pride Month. I always think that's really funny. Of course, a community that he maybe hated the most or second most, maybe.
Yeah, you know, this and if it would have been June or February, it would have been cool either way.
So happy Ronald Reagan Death Day to you all. I hope you're celebrating. Happy Pride Month, of course. And we hope this week you can maybe find your inner zen a little bit.
Yeah.
Next week, we'll get back to all the news that's pertaining to you
specifically.
Yeah, next week,
we're going to talk about bands, stuff like that, all that. Maybe talk about Matt Walsh and his shenanigans, but not this time.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Not this time.
Welcome back to Head in the Office, everybody. We do still got quite the loaded episode for you all. We're going to talk about why the Senate hates you, not specifically for LGBTQ reasons, but for other reasons.
Exactly. Generally, why the
SCOTUS
Senate hates you.
SCOTUS hates you as a member of the working class, of which I'm going to assume all of you are. Texas hates you,
Texas
of course.
Texas hates you.
Lots of things
Mike
hating
Pence
you.
Mike Pence hates you.
Mike Pence hates you. Well, that might be some LGBTQ news.
That's
but, like,
true.
Adjacently, you
I'd
know what I mean? We're sticking to our principles.
He hates the working class.
We're sticking to our principles here. And, you know, we'll stick. We're men of our word. We said it in the intro, no bad LGBTQ news this week.
That's right.
We're going to stick to it. We do got a lot to cover, but before we get into it, as always, we'll remind you all, check out the Patreon. We're constantly growing. We just got a bunch of new patrons over the last week, 2 weeks or so. So welcome to the early episode. If this is your first
welcome
one.
Welcome to Sunday Supremacists.
We're glad you're here.
We got here. Episode 100.
Episode 100
We're
big.
In the triple digits now.
Exactly, yeah.
We're in the triple digits.
No it's looking back.
No one to thank but you guys.
We're going
to
get syndicated. There's going to be reruns on nightly NBC.
All the time. we're actually scabs, and we're going to be replacing the late night shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no. they're dark right now, running reruns. Not anymore. We're actually taking over. We're going to write for them.
It's crazy to think that for we've had some deviations, of course. We've recorded, I think, once on a Wednesday just because car problems, right?
I think it was because I had COVID.
Yeah, COVID's been a problem.
There was one day
I
had COVID and we got a late episode out.
But there's been an episode of Head in the Office for every single day for 100 weeks since July, 2021?
Something like that.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. That is
an episode of Hitto every single week. And we couldn't have done it without you guys.
Oh, my goodness.
And we especially couldn't have done it without the people that allow us to upgrade the studio and pay the bills, mm-hmm. of course. So thank you to those that are on Patreon. Thank you to those that listen to us, that are joining us now. We love you.
We love you.
And if you want to support us in other ways, you could always go to the YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, Discord. It's all down there in the description. It's all there available for you. Another way you can support us for free, of course, is by leaving us a 5-star review on Apple. You know, we read these every single week.
Every week. And you know, last week we had a bit of a lack.
That is true. We only had one last week. We did have another on Instagram that we read, but we've got many to read today.
This week, not so much. It looks like y'all heard our call.
Yeah.
Y'all heard our whining and our complaining. And like, really
look,
got to it.
We always love the 5-star reviews, right?
Love
it means you guys are enjoying the episodes. It means you guys want to help boost us in the algorithm. I don't know what Apple fucking does with them, because we've gotten like 250 5-star reviews.
Uh-huh.
And it
still
doesn't
haven't hit new and noteworthy.
It's fine. But sometimes y'all like to write us novels. And we read them. We read all of them.
And I will. That's what I'm here for. That's what I'm here for.
But just know we always love it. First one here is from Jonathan Cassis. Subject line, so good I switched from Android to iPhone
just
to give these Sigmas a 5-star review. We are helping Apple in their profits right now.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan says, not that they need any more 5-star reviews. We do. But I had to do it to prove my dedication. Been a Sunday superstar for a few months now and can 100% assure you it's worth it.
So can I.
The amount of work Jeremy and Gage do to keep so many entertained and informed is extremely impressive and honestly heartwarming. I started listening regularly around March of 2022, right around the Russia-Ukraine episode. Hey, I remember that one. And made sure to listen to their first episode, Biden Fumbling the Bag, too current. And that was Biden Fumbling the Bag, and then there was a parentheses question mark.
Because
we weren't sure.
We weren't as defined. You know, that was episode one. We're episode 100 now.
Exactly. 100 episodes later, here we are. As a mostly gay cis man from Washington State, I would like Jeremy and Gage to be a couple, but I understand and respect who they are, so I won't indoctrinate my woke, perverted lifestyle onto them. On a more serious note, please, people of Washington State, don't let Texas beat us in the Hitto demographics. It's embarrassing. Where are my woke Washingtonians at for real? Also, if you're from Tomoka, vote for me in August for civil service position number 3. P.S. as a political candidate. Do I now get to be a possible guest appearance on the show? P.S.S. Thought about it some more and I would fangirl a little too hard and anxiety be through the roof, so I'm going to opt out regardless. What a roller coaster.
What can I say? A roller coaster of emotions right there. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I've been waiting for the ships. I have.
That's true, yeah.
I've been waiting for the ships. It's like, that's how you know that you're succeeding.
Exactly.
And when you get it on episode 100, there's something special about that, right?
Very special.
Just like how there's something special about the review by Susie Simmons.
Excellent transition.
What can I say? Yeah. Found you guys on TikTok. I'm a lefty who periodically takes a break from political news because my mental health can't handle the simulated reality we have to be living in right now. But you guys brought me back into it with your commentary. This show gives me hope that we aren't completely screwed for the future. Keep up the good work, guys. Nice.
Thank you so much for that review.
So much.
Next one, thank you guys. Says, as a trans woman that lives in the Bible Belt, the news cycle is very depressing. But you two guys have given me a little hope. I found Hitto on TikTok and love the way you add comedy into the depressing news cycle. I'm currently a Wednesday weenie, but when I can, I will shed the title and become a Sunday supremacist. Much love from Caleb.
Oh, very much love. Very much love for that Sunday supremacist title. You know, if you want a quick way to my heart.
Yeah, exactly. Non-parasocial.
The heart and mind.
Intimate love. I actually romantically love you. And that's real.
Infatuated.
Real.
You know
don't
I'm
let
saying?
Anyone tell you it's not a real relationship.
Oh, my goodness. Speaking of that, another Texan for Hitto.
Oh, my goodness.
From Zosbor. I found this pod earlier this year, and since then I've been listening nonstop. My brothers in Christ have caught me up on the last few years of putridity and reignited my interest in politics with their informed and articulate takes. You know, that's the goal.
Precisely.
That's the goal.
Exactly what we try to do.
Being a FedEx courier gives me hours and hours each day to immerse myself in their content, and I've been so hard that after listening to every episode from this year, I went back to their inception and am now halfway through 2022. Mm. What a better way to kick out episode 100 than to be all these reviewers saying that they're fully caught up on the content.
Exactly. Every episode
fully
you watched
immersed.
So
oh
many hours
goodness.
Of Head in the Office.
Jeremy and Gage are my new binge-worthy Netflix show.
On God.
They are the book I can't put down.
Oh my God.
The kind that makes you sad when you finish and it leaves you feeling like you don't know what to do with yourself. Well, I'll tell you what you can do with yourself.
Take yourself over to patreon.com/headintheofficepod.
You want the episode just a little bit earlier. Just a little bit earlier.
3 days. That's half the week.
Since I know that is what I'm going to do when I get caught up, I will be joining the esteemed ranks of the Sunday Supremacists in the hopes that at some point we can get 2 weekly episodes in the future. Simply the best geopolitical podcast there is. Also, it's George Orwell, but hopefully you guys know that by now. Or maybe I missed some inside joke along the way. God damn it. Hopefully these amazing friends never stop doing what they're doing and excited to see what the future holds for them. Your friendly Texan socialist.
Yeah, PSA. Anytime we say, like, George Orwin, George Bush. It's a joke. A yeah, no, we just say because you know it's used so often.
It's silly.
It's cliche, so we say it wrong purposely.
I'm just making a goof. I'm a silly man, and the world is hard for
us. I have a lot of respect for socialists from Texas because that's not a good state to be. you know what I mean?
It's tough.
You're not getting much done there. You have no real power. So shout outs to you for sticking by and surviving, doing what you can.
Yes. Yes.
Next review is from Casey Lynn. S tier podcast. Casey says, I've only been listening to this podcast for a few weeks and I've already created an embarrassing parasocial relationship with these guys.
It's not embarrassing.
It's real, actually.
You should never feel embarrassed about that.
Never had I ever downloaded Patreon and become a patron until I started listening to this podcast. Takes the intensity out of the day-to-day grinding news and adds humor and lightness with a sprinkle of actual political theory. We're political theorists, after all.
100%.
I'm a big fan and can't shut up about how good this pod is. Sending support from a proud union teacher in CT, Connecticut. I think that's what the
at states, dog.
Yeah. CT. Anyway, thank you for the review.
I do politics, not geography.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Anyway, next time, longtime listener to the upcoming... the title cut off.
Go Geopolitical Podcast.
Exactly. Yeah. What he said, that part, from Bull Lion. Longtime listener, Wednesday Weenie, and first-time Apple reviewer. Okay. This pod is a must-listen. Currently listening to Debt, Default, and DeSantis in Europe while my mom and her dumbass conservative boyfriend ruined vacation, and I wouldn't have any other pod help get me through it with politics that are actually sane on God.
That might be my favorite review
That's
ever.
Such a good, That's it's, so it's funny. Such a good one. The aggression there is just, dare I say, borderline perfect.
I love cooking the family members, too. It's always good to just come out and say
exactly.
it.
Exactly, especially with the anonymity of an Apple review.
Yeah,
It's cathartic to stroke those keys.
Precisely, and then have it read publicly for thousands of people to hear.
Exactly.
Well, they don't know. How could they know?
How could they know? How could they ever get back?
I'm sure there's tons of families visiting Europe right now with dumbass conservative husbands.
That's true. I'm sure so many of your moms have dumbass conservative boyfriends, maybe.
Yeah, it's kind of a trend. Happens.
It's
that
rough.
Way.
Yeah. It does. It's not over to the Instagram reviews. The people who we so kindly open it up to if they
we are gracious,
you know?
Generous for them. Yeah.
This one from Rachel. Hey y'all, I wanted to send in my review. I wasn't sure if it would show on Apple Podcasts since I'm abroad, but here you go. You know, this is why we're the number one geopolitics podcast.
Yeah, we got people
foreign
all around
reviews
the globe.
Don't show up on Apple for us. We give you the opportunity.
Hitto International, if I'm being honest.
It's because we represent news from around the world. We have to represent people from around the world in our
precisely
in our reviews. But anyway. This is my favorite podcast, as Jeremy and Gage are really engaging and keep my attention where most podcasts don't. Hitto has become an important part of my weekly routine.
Oh my God.
Where I listen to y'all as I make bread.
Well, now we can't stop.
Thanks. Nothing like kneading your frustration into dough and then getting to eat it later. It's a great way for me to keep up with U.S. politics and hear leftist takes, as I'm from Alabama but currently living in Wales for my master's degree. As part of the LGBTQ+ community, I'm really grateful that y'all cover our issues, especially trans issues. I definitely feel more informed going into this election cycle and have more hope knowing y'all are doing good work and I've created a great community surrounding Hitto. Keep it up.
You know, if you want to knead our political frustrations into dough, you can go to patreon.com/. Okay, enough self-plugging. I'm sorry.
That's a good one. Let me scroll on the next review. This one's from Adrian Johns.
Okay.
As a blue-collar Marxist deep in the heart of Texas, another Texas Hitto listener.
Nice.
Finding you guys on TikTok about a year and a half ago was nice as a baby leftist. I made more moves on the blue-collar ladder and eventually got Spotify Premium so I could listen to music on the job site, but never engaged with podcasts due to some slight executive dysfunction. Flash forward to now, and I'm constantly listening and re-listening to weekly episodes every Wednesday. I'll join the Sunday savants as soon as my financial affairs are in order. I absolutely love this podcast. I constantly badger my friends to listen to this unequivocally based duo of quirked up white boys busting it down leftist style while radicalizing them in every imaginable way.
Quite the description.
Parentheses, I am insufferable. You are doing the Lord's work from one member of the backbone of this country to another. I salute you both. I really hope this was the right way to leave my review, as I can't recall the process for the Spotify Squadron. LOL.
You literally got it.
You literally got it.
Thank you so much for the review.
And our final review this week from Katie. Caden Zabel on Instagram. Okay, fine. I guess I'll leave my 5-star review here.
Oh,
I started listening to Hitto a few months ago on my commute to campus in the morning, and I can say with the most positive, grandiose energy possible that this is the best podcast I've ever listened to and had the pleasure of enjoying. As someone who was born and raised in Wisconsin, luckily the blue part of Wisconsin, I love listening to the boys' takes and thoughts about the political climate here. When traveling outside of my blue area, I'm reminded of the stupidity of the far right and their arguments, but with Hitto, I'm able to defend my arguments and make them look even stupider, which is just amazing. The Hitto boys have also fostered an incredibly smart and funny community, which makes this podcast even more enjoyable. I highly recommend this podcast to anyone who wants to be more involved in politics and wants to hear a refreshing take on the hellfire that is the United States government and sometimes geopolitical news, too.
Wow. Thank you all so much for those reviews. Excellent. We read every single word of every single review you send us, and we love the kind words. So
have to.
Couldn't do it without you all.
I need it to get through the week, really.
Now,
it's like a drug.
To kick off episode 100, I think we got to talk about how Armageddon is not happening right now, at least.
Yeah, it was really, really a coin flip to see where we were going to eat. It was either
$1 trillion coin flip, if you will.
It was either going to be episode 100 was the last episode ever, pretty much, or episode 100, things would be kind of okay.
Yeah, and we kind of got the kind of okay, but also kind of like, I don't love this
really
scenario.
Really high risk, no reward.
Yeah, yeah. So if you don't know what we're talking about, last week, the House and the Senate both passed a debt ceiling deal, paving the way for Joe Biden to sign the law ahead of the June 5th Armageddon date, which I believe he already did sign the law as of today, yes. June 4th. First, last Wednesday, the House passed the debt ceiling deal that we outlined last week by a vote of 314 to 117, a fairly comfortable margin for the Biden-McCarthy deal, as it's been dubbed. But the act is actually called, pretty cornily, the Fiscal Responsibility Act.
Like, why'd they let them title it that?
It just doesn't matter, I guess.
It doesn't matter. It's just giving them points that, yeah, you know, we forced Biden to pass the Fiscal Responsibility Act.
Right.
Look at that. We reined in Democrat spending. Like, why are we giving them these points?
And, right, for reasons we talked about last episode, they didn't really rein in any spending, especially because they cut IRS funding, which reins in spending. But, yeah, so that deal passed. 71 Republicans voted against it alongside 46 Democrats for very different reasons, obviously, but there was pretty substantial resistance from both parties in this bill for different reasons, as I said. It's unclear if McCarthy's going to get executed, in parentheses, removed from office, doing this, because some of the farther right elements in the Republican Party are pretty upset with him for what he did, because he passed a bill, or he put up a bill for approval that did pass that didn't really have the cuts that they wanted. So we'll see what happens.
Which is also crazy, because it's like, this is all for them.
Yep.
We didn't really get anything. This is all just strictly for conservatives.
Yeah.
And more conservatives voted against it. What's going on?
The only thing that, like, Democrats really got, other than moving the debt ceiling out, which already isn't, like, a parameter that we should accept as a means for debate, right?
Yeah.
Like, we shouldn't think, oh, that's some big success. It shouldn't have happened anyway.
We should reject the premise.
The one good thing was the welfare reform, which expanded to it wasn't even that good, Larry. It was, like, trading.
It was a trade-off.
It expanded to include homeless people and veterans in, like, the exemptions from work requirements or something.
Added more a higher like age range.
Kick some people off, brought some people in.
Yeah.
Which is like not great, but like some people, you get the idea.
Yeah, it's like, okay, I mean, I guess we're going to try to salvage it in a way that we can, but whatever. But it's also, I would like to remind you all that it only takes one person to call a vote to kick Kevin McCarthy out.
Yeah.
And with the current makeup,
71
of things,
voted against
if
it. Right?
71 are voting against it. I think they only needed 3 to be not happy to call a vote. And assuming all the Democrats vote to kick McCarthy out, he's out. He doesn't have a job.
Yeah, that's the thing is, like, right now, like, who else could be speaker from the Republican Party? I don't think anyone from the Democratic Party is going to get the 5 extra votes to become the speaker. Nobody from the Republican side is going to get any Democrats to vote alongside them. So Kevin's like the only guy that can do it. And I would hope that if we do get to a point where they're calling for a vote to kick Kevin out, Democrats just go with chaos.
Yeah.
They just cause as much chaos as possible.
Because that'd be so sick. Because like
don't go along and vote for Kevin. Just cause chaos.
Yeah. Just vote no for anyone.
Yeah.
Like make them come together and decide. That'd be so cool. That'd be so funny.
Yeah. Because like, what are we going to get? Speaker Matt Gaetz? Like, come on. It's just, I can't see anyone other than Kevin McCarthy getting it. But I guess we'll see what they do with him. I don't think he'll get kicked out because of this. But maybe, right?
I hope they call a vote. Yeah. I hope they call a vote. I just hope he's scared.
Yeah, that'd be a fun thing to cover next episode. Just another 15 rounds of voting.
Quaking in his boots, going nuts.
The bill then quickly moved through the Senate, where it passed with no amendments, 63-36, overcoming the filibuster, obviously, with a few Democrats defecting. I think it was about four, including Bernie Sanders, who's technically an independent.
Yeah.
But most of the no votes, all of the no votes almost, came from the Republican Party in the Senate. But the bill did pass, got signed by Joe Biden, so
I guess
the ceiling
isn't
collapsing.
Yeah. Nice.
Just as a quick reminder, the bill includes raising the debt ceiling to support borrowing through 2025 or into 2025, so beyond the next election, presidential election. It sets spending limits for the next 2 years, cuts welfare in a variety of ways, as we talked about, adds work requirements, reduces IRS spending, reforms the permitting process for green energy and also non-green energy, harmful energy. And all the details,
fracking.
All the details for this plan, you can go and listen to last episode. We covered it very in depth.
Pretty
and
sick.
It's basically
pretty
the same.
Sick. Like the only win I've seen Democrats really touting outside of like exchanging who gets benefits from welfare was that guys, look, now we don't have to talk about this for the election.
Yeah, but it's like we shouldn't have to, right?
Yeah,
like that. Like, that's
this
the thing.
Should be a thing that passes regardless of politics because it needs to pass regardless of politics.
Yeah. So the debt ceiling deal isn't nearly as bad as we thought it would be.
Yeah.
When McCarthy first unveiled exactly what his party wanted, it was fucking awful.
Yeah. Like, kick everyone off every social.
Really bad. Cuts to basically everything. Cuts to everything Joe Biden had accomplished.
I was gonna say it basically would have undone the Inflation Reduction Act.
Yeah. 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 But I still hate to see Democrats touting this as a sort of victory, right? Like, I almost, like, of course it's good that we're not going to collapse economically. It's good the global economy is not going to crash. Don't get me wrong. I'm happy that's not going to happen. But the problem is, basically everything in this bill is a loss in some capacity, and Democrats voting for this bill, I feel like, almost sets the precedent that, like, yeah, you can use the debt ceiling function to hold us hostage again and get whatever you want, or get at least a form of what you want out of it, and I just, like, don't love it.
I guess I can empathize with the position that they were in, and that, yeah, sure, you know, the global economy might collapse, but if this comes with them in the future not taking the steps necessary to prevent something like that from ever being able to happen again, then they fuck up, and that's where bad things really start to happen, because now they know that the GOP is willing to do this. Now they know, okay, you know, maybe we have whatever that amendment, 14th Amendment, maybe we have other avenues that we can take to get there, like, if things start to happen, but maybe we should take the steps in the meantime now to prevent this from ever getting there.
Yeah.
Maybe we should start these negotiations sooner. Maybe we should work to actually get majorities so we can pass clean raises.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not confident Democrats are going to think that far ahead.
No.
Some people have praised Joe Biden for negotiating well and getting the deal to be not as horrific as it originally was. And, you know, maybe, right? Maybe
it's
he can,
like,
get
I
the
guess,
credit
but
for
it's
that.
Also like Republicans can't let the economy collapse either.
Well, exactly. And it's also the ratchet effect in real time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we get pulled further to the right, or things get cut, bad things happen in some capacity. Democrats soften the blow a little bit, and we never end up going back to where we were before or improving beyond that point. And it's just, it continues to make things worse in the face of Republicans that are willing to do anything to get what they want, right? They will, and that's the thing, is that Democrats won't threaten the global economy to get whatever they want. And that's a good thing that they're a little bit more sane. But when they're up against opponents that will do just that, it's an asymmetry. They can't win those battles.
There's a huge power imbalance here. You're in a street fight and the other person brought out a knife.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
You need to do something to be able to defend yourself.
Right.
And you need to be able to take the steps to be able to handle the situation. And I'm not confident that they're going to be able to do that in the future. But for now, it's like, I fucking guess.
Yeah. The lawsuits for the 14th Amendment getting rid of the debt ceiling need to, like, happen now. I think there's one that's happening on behalf of people that work in the Treasury Department that were like, hey, we weren't going to get paid anymore. but I don't know if that's directly challenging the debt ceiling thing, or if that will result in the debt ceiling being overturned or whatever. They need to directly start, like, suing or something.
Yeah.
Start some kind of litigation that directly targets the 14th Amendment and the debt ceiling, so that it's not a problem anymore. Now would be the time to do that, right?
That's
get it up to the Supreme Court as soon as we can.
That's true. But I know, like, I guess the issue with that was, like, what, the Supreme Court's term is almost over anyway. They don't really have time to take a case. But, like,
and they're conservative.
Make them work.
Yeah.
Make them do their job.
At least try something, right?
Because
they don't have the Senate votes to get rid of the debt ceiling
right
now.
Try something other than capitulating to Kevin McCarthy's demands. Kevin McCarthy, imagine bending over for that guy.
Yeah. Like, he sucks. He.
Oh my god.
Yeah, he's touting this as a victory. Biden's touting this as a victory. It's just.
Biden's touting it as a victory. Some Democrats are like, "Yeah, we did good." Some Republicans are, "Yeah, we did good." The vast majority of both have been saying this deal is shit. Actually, no one is happy. No one's satisfied.
Oh well, I guess that's how it goes in American politics, right? Awful place.
That's what compromise is, after all. Precisely. No one is happy at all.
No one gets to be happy. Now, moving on to our next topic. If you were worried that our government might actually be functioning, given that we passed the debt ceiling deal. Yeah,
the last one, more about the House being awful.
Uh-huh.
This one, more about the Senate.
Yeah, if you were worried that they were doing their job, don't be, because they're not.
it's a 1-2 to both chambers right now.
yeah. So last Thursday, the Senate took action to repeal Joe Biden's student debt forgiveness plan.
Immensely popular That's plan, mind you.
Really all this news story is about. It was a 52-46 vote in favor of the bill, with Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, and John Tester being the Democrats to join the 49 Republicans in knocking the plan down legislatively for no reason other than love of the game, I can assume, hurting people.
It really is. Of course, Kyrsten switched again, because like Joe's been in the news, but it's like it feels like she wants to be back in the news again.
Yeah.
It feels like she wants her name to be in and people calling her awful.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
God.
From Politico, Manchin said it was, quote, a reckless plan that adds too much to the national debt. And in a statement, he said, quote, it forces hardworking taxpayers who already paid off their loans or did not go to college to shoulder the cost.
Oh, yeah.
Same old arguments.
What a like dope and logical line of thinking when it comes to government funded programs, social programs, because like I feel the same way, honestly.
Yeah.
My house has never burnt down in a fire.
Precisely.
So why should I, as a hardworking taxpayer, have to work to subsidize the fire departments that help other people's homes who burn down in fires?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense.
I've never driven on a road in another state before, so I don't know why I should have to help infrastructure development federally.
Exactly.
Like, why should I have to pay for bridges?
What's going on? And like, you may say, like, oh, what if your house accidentally catches fire? I mean, maybe. Like, maybe, but you could reduce my taxes.
I'm responsible, though.
What about people who light their houses on fire, maybe as an act of ignorance? Mm-hmm. What about people who mess up and light their houses? Why should I have to pay for their mess up? Really?
Yeah.
Or is it that we recognize that these programs, like the fire department, these social programs, are beneficial for society as a whole?
Yeah.
More than they benefit every individual.
Yeah, it's crazy that we have to re-explain like the idea of taxation as a way of like building up collective resources that we all share together and benefit from.
It's like, okay, every individual benefits, like doesn't really benefit that much from the fire department, right? But society as a whole benefits so much more. Like the sum is greater than the whole is greater than the sum of its parts here.
Right.
When we're talking about these things. And I just love how when it comes to like talking about taxes and social programs, the GOP only ever frames cuts and like wasteful spending and things like that in the context of what program, who they can paint as lazy.
Yeah.
Because again, they're never like fire department budgets are overinflated, guys.
Yeah.
There's not really many fires. They're just sitting around basically going on vacations. That's never happening. They're never
looking at— Why are my tax dollars going to this?
Like, they're never looking at police budgets and saying, okay, they're just sitting in neighborhoods and talking and not doing their job.
Yeah.
They're just sitting on the highway and not clocking anybody, not doing their fucking job at all.
Mm-hmm.
Just dicking around. No, they only look at people that they can paint as lazy. They only look at people who they can paint as irresponsible, and they say what programs are helping them so that they can go and make their cuts and win points in the culture war. It's ridiculous, and you should reject the premise that they're arguing on. You should reject the idea that like you as a taxpayer shouldn't have to pay for social programs because they are beneficial to everyone, especially a program like student debt relief.
Exactly.
We understand. They always talk about make America great again. They always talk about bringing America back to when we were an economic powerhouse. When we were an economic powerhouse, top marginal tax rate was like 90%, right? When we were an economic powerhouse, college was cheap and affordable, and pretty much most people could go.
Yeah.
And you could get a great job out of college. Now, not really the same thing. It's really hard to go to college, it's hard to get into college, and it's hard to pay for college after you go if you could go in the first place.
Yeah, and like student loans were created by the federal government as a means of competing with Russia during the Cold War because we wanted to send more people to college to get an education so that we could compete economically and, of course, militarily, because everything has to do with the military in this country. But now all student loans do is shackle you for like 20, 30 years because you struggle to pay them back, and it keeps you from actually spending money in the economy, which is the source of growth for a capitalist system. So it's not even just about like who's responsible, whose shoulders is it falling on. It's a matter of if the country's going to continue or not.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing?
It's a matter of like the measures that measure the economy.
Yeah.
Like frankly, things that they always talk about are things that would benefit from student debt relief, benefit people having more money in their pockets, mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Yeah, and that's besides the point that, of course, Joe Biden's student debt forgiveness plan didn't raise taxes on anybody.
Literally, like, didn't raise taxes.
Nobody's taxes were being raised.
It did some pretty good things.
Yeah.
And it obfuscates the fact that we also just need free college in general.
Yeah.
Because, again, an educated society can work better and, like, mm-hmm. work more and produce things, especially in a society like America when we aren't doing, like, hard manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're mostly running on, like, higher-end industries, like tech, stuff like that.
Right.
You need a more educated workforce. You need people
also,
like that to do these things.
I feel like when people like Joe Manchin make that argument where it's like, oh, why people that never went to college, didn't choose to go to college, have to shoulder your burden, it's like, would they have chosen to go to college if they could have afforded it, though?
Yeah.
And if they wanted to, I would be happy for my tax dollars to go towards them going to college because that'll make them smarter and give them the ability to do more things.
Like,
I like
education.
A society where people can do stuff that they want to do without
yeah.
being burdened economically forever.
Or even if they don't want to go to college to, like, I don't know, get a finance job. They want mm-hmm. to go to college to study art and become a more well-rounded human. That's pretty sick,
it's
too.
It's culture, right?
Like, that's culture. That's yeah. dope. That's sick. That's pretty cool,
mm-hmm.
if I'm to say so myself. And it's better for society as a whole.
These are, like, Renaissance concepts. Like,
we're doing the – we're walking you through the Enlightenment.
Yeah, explaining why, like, culture is important, why the arts are important, while studying humanity is important. Like,
when,
what are we
when
doing?
When we study societies from the past, do we focus on necessarily the things that they were manufacturing,
mm-hmm.
or do we think about, like, what makes them culturally distinct?
Right.
Is that do we think of, like, how their society, like, functioned, what people in their society could do? Is that how we measure societies? Yeah, it is.
Right.
Golly, bro.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. And of course, Joe Manchin argues it's going to add more to the national debt, which of course it wasn't, because the way we were paying for it in terms of the national debt was with the savings that we got through the Inflation Reduction Act.
Uh-huh.
So actually, it's net zero, yeah. Joe Manchin.
Yeah.
And I remember him being pissed about that specifically because it wipes out the savings that we got through the Inflation Reduction Act. But it doesn't add anything, actually. It's almost exact amount.
Did Joe Manchin get his pipeline? In the deal?
I don't
know.
Did
you hear about that?
Did he?
There was a pipeline.
In the debt ceiling deal?
That he was going to get in the debt ceiling deal that he, like, wanted to build or something. And
yeah.
it was originally in it. I don't know if it was in it, like, the final version that Biden is going to sign.
Mm-hmm.
But he could have got a fucking oil pipeline out of this.
That's crazy.
That's, like, what I'm saying.
Come on now.
As, like, the cool guy. Oh, my God. I hate him so much.
Yeah, he's awful. He's terrible. Now, if you're wondering how the Senate got around the filibuster, because you might notice I said 52. Yeah, it was 52 votes
yep.
that got this bill passed. Apparently, there's some rule that lets you undo regulations with a simple majority. I feel like they're making stuff up.
Cool.
Yeah, I did not know about that.
What the fuck?
I just read it in an article, and I'm like, oh, cool, great.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, because one of the Democrats could have filibustered it. Otherwise, I would think they would have to raise the threshold to 60.
Uh-huh.
And that's not what happened. It just got through on 52.
But it's like, why is it easier to undo regulation than it is to, like, make the regulation, you know?
Capitalism. the state only, like, exists to help capital, right?
Come on, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
ridiculous.
Now, Biden has already pledged to veto this bill that
Does
undoes
it matter,
the
debt
forgiveness. Yeah, because they won't be able to get a two-thirds majority to
override
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not going to go into effect. Of course, this is still held up in courts. The idea that Biden can do this at all is held up in court.
Uh-huh.
So it's not as though he vetoes this bill and then it immediately happens. We're still waiting on that court decision. But
yeah.
this legislation won't pass, meaning that there's still somewhat of a chance. And, you know, like,
I'm praying for that chance.
When it comes to the student debt forgiveness, we see Republicans in both chambers pass a bill that completely wipes out what Biden wanted to do for
yep.
student debt forgiveness. And they wonder why young people hate them so much. Like, student debt is one of the main things that afflicts young people, especially young students, certainly, in this country, because it is tens of thousands of dollars that we are shackled with economically.
Yeah.
It is a major source of stress for so many people, tens of millions of people in this country. And somebody wants to do something about it. And then the Republicans are like, no, you actually should deal with this on your own. Like, what the fuck are we talking about?
They go out there. People are in bad material situations because they're like, fuck, this student debt, it's killing me. It's bleeding me dry, right? And then they go on the news, they open up Facebook, the internet, whatever, and Republicans are touting that, guys, we gutted it. We got it out of there.
Yeah.
We're not going to help these lazy pieces of shit ever again. Yeah. They're not getting it. They need to work harder.
Yeah.
Why would they ever vote for
and
you?
And they do this at the same time they tell us that we've been indoctrinated into voting for Democrats, and Democrats don't actually have our interests at heart, while they are simultaneously blocking anything from passing that would actually help this generation be successful economically. Like, what are we talking? Of course young people hate you. You don't do anything for young people. You actively tell us that we are entitled, that we're lazy, that we're not doing enough, and then you prevent anything that would actually help us from passing.
And that's why young Republicans are so cucked.
Yeah, 100%.
Especially like Republican or they're college just wealthy, campus, right? Bro. They either just had everything like paid for, not even like scholarships, like they had that shit paid for, like out of pocket by their parents, or something else is going on, then they're absurdly wealthy. But that's why they're so cucked.
Yeah, no, it's crazy to me because I mean I'm a person with student debt, obviously, from the federal government.
I don't have like crazy student debt, but I have student debt.
And I'm someone who would have benefited from this. Same. And if I wasn't a political person. And, you know, I'm just thinking how I'm going to get by, if I'm going to get a job, if I'm ever going to be able to, like, buy a home, settle down, something like that. And, you know, I'm looking at the $26,000 in debt or whatever I have.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, like, I wish somebody would help me with this because this is a ton of money. I got to pay back monthly repayments. The Republicans want repayments to start as well. I'm looking at this and thinking, like, you know, if somebody stepped in and helped me, I'm voting for them, right?
Yeah.
If I'm a person that doesn't vote often or doesn't think about voting, I'm voting for the person who's helping me deal with the tens of thousands of dollars in debt that I have that, frankly, students shouldn't have anyway.
Yeah, no, it's literally like I'm starting working in like a month and a half, right? And in 6 months, no, 5 months, because I've been graduated for a month, I got to start repayment. Because you only have 6 months after you graduate to get a job and start repaying.
Yeah.
That's it. You only have a little bit of leniency. So I'm looking at the couple thousand dollars that could have been wiped out by this. Like,
yeah,
it'd be pretty cool if that was off my balance and I could pay this down sooner.
Exactly. And thankfully, there is now income-driven repayments, which I think is 5% of your monthly income goes
something
towards
like that,
it, which is very helpful for a lot of people. But that was also a Joe Biden executive order, along with the larger student debt forgiveness plan that Republicans didn't want to go into effect.
Yeah, and they shit on it when it happened.
Yeah. Like, they'll make all kinds of arguments about how you should pay it back on your own, how you should, you know, be more responsible. You chose to take it out and all that. But fundamentally, it's a question of, do we want the country to continue to grow? And should students, do students deserve in this day and age to be shackled like this economically? Mm-hmm. If you aren't wealthy, you have no choice but to take out student debt.
Yeah.
And if they're going to say that it's a personal responsibility argument that you need to be more responsible, then what they're saying is only wealthy people should be able to go to college. That's fundamentally the argument they're making.
And it's also just fundamentally, it's a question of like our hyper individualistic culture.
For
when
sure.
When we consider anything about like social programs and tax things that would help people.
Mm-hmm.
That's really all it is, right? Because like small business subsidies despite us being a small business, a successful small business, they don't really help us, right? Like we're not that
at
kind
all,
of
actually.
Small business. But other small businesses are helped a lot by small business subsidies. And I'm fine with that. I'm not mad at my tax dollars or my Michigan tax dollars going to support small businesses that are struggling
of course
in
not.
The area.
Yeah.
Because I recognize ultimately this will bring money into the area and benefit me economically in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I don't know, good for society, good for my community, good for culture, even.
It's just, once again, Democrats just at a base level on almost every policy issue being better on the economy.
Yeah.
Like, it just in every single way. And yet somehow, some reason, Republicans are still treated as like the fiscally responsible ones, the intelligent ones when it comes
to
the economy.
It's because they've co-opted rhetoric of responsibility.
Of course.
And that's really it. They just call everything else irresponsible. They point the finger at these big numbers when it comes to national debt without actually having like a reason. There are some people that have like actual takes about the national debt, like reasonable things to say about why we don't have it. But it's not conservative politicians.
Yeah.
It's not. You aren't hearing actual discussions from them. They're just pointing at it, look who's spending, and they're lying about who's spending more money half the time.
And somehow it's now considered fiscally responsible to just force people to suffer.
Yeah.
Like that's fiscal responsibility is forcing people into a state of being a prisoner to their own debt that they now
being
owe
a prisoner to
federal
Sally
government.
May.
Yeah. Right. To the federal government, which they're not supposed to like.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Anyway, if you thought the Senate was on your side, you're wrong.
Maybe that's how we need to tackle the issue, right? In a very libertarian manner, like, wow, you really want these students, people who just want to learn how to, maybe they're getting an economics degree, maybe they're business majors,
exactly.
You know? They're going and learning about the economy. You want them to be shackled to the federal government for the rest of their life? You want them to be beholden to the federal, to be beholden? to the
exactly.
feds.
Joe Biden's trying to free them from the steel hand of the federal government.
Exactly.
And you won't let that happen.
The Federal Reserve is squeezing them.
Yeah.
Squeezing them dry.
And if you refuse to pay, who's showing up at your door, right? It's federal agents.
Oh,
yeah. You want that to happen to the average working American?
What Stafford himself showing up to your door.
Exactly.
Busted down.
The IRS agents with their fucking AR-15 and their Humvees rolling up to your house saying, where are those? Give me the $350 you owe this month.
That's right. Come on. You got to. Give me your 5% of your income. It's basically a tax.
Exactly.
And I know you guys don't like
and
those.
If you don't have the money, they just raid your kitchen, steal all your shit. They walk up with your PS5.
Uh-huh.
That you got from rejecting union dues at Amazon. Speaking of unions, we got to talk about another government. See, we've covered the Senate, we've covered the House, we've covered the White House, and now we're going to talk about the other branch of government,
Supreme Court.
They also hate you this week.
Oh, this is really an exciting time because it's officially Supreme Court season.
Oh, bam.
It is Supreme Court season, baby. Decisions. Oh my God. Decisions are dropping left and right for the next few weeks. We're going to be covering hell on earth. Democracy could end. We've averted the economic catastrophe.
Uh-huh.
But now we have to worry about the independent state legislature theory.
Exactly. And you got to worry about, in this case, for the news that we're covering today, your right to strike, your ability to advocate for yourself in the workplace without having to pay out of pocket on your own.
Your
for
ability
the,
to
the
not,
damages.
I don't know, be a slave to your workplace, no matter what, if anything's going wrong. Your ability to speak out against unfair labor practices. That's what's on the docket today.
I mean, so for all of our existence as a podcast, we've been haters of the Supreme Court.
100%.
Naturally, we've called for it to be abolished after Roe v. Wade, after all the horrible decisions we've seen out of SCOTUS.
I think we were talking about it being abolished before Roe v. Wade, too.
When they were like, you got to evict people.
SCOTUS wants you to be homeless.
Yeah, they were like, nope, you got to evict people. You know, we've been on the hate train for SCOTUS for quite the long time, of course. And what better way to celebrate episode 100 than getting back to our roots?
Oh, yeah.
A return to form, if you will. So we're talking about the Supreme Court today. In a massive blow to labor unions and labor activism, the Supreme Court has ruled in another god-awful decision, naturally.
8-1.
8-1 that unions can be sued in state court for property damage and even profit loss broadly, which we'll talk about in a second, that occurs during a strike. Now, the exact nature of this property damage is the contention in this case, and I think what we need to highlight because it has very big implications for really every worker in the country.
Pretty much anyone who wants to strike.
Yeah. So here's how the story goes. In 2017, workers for Glacier Northwest, a company that mixes and sells concrete, went on strike while their Teamsters union was in the process of negotiating for a better contract. They weren't getting the contract. They went on strike. Pretty typical thing to do, right? The workers then went on strike, leaving their shift and leaving the concrete mixing on its own in the trucks unsupervised. If you don't know anything about mixing concrete, as I don't, basically, you can't mix it forever, right? Uh-huh. If you leave it mixing, it won't dry because if you leave concrete still, it dries. That's the point.
It's always tumbling.
It's always spinning so that it doesn't dry and you can pour it out. But you can't do that forever. Eventually, it'll go bad. The trucks themselves were fine once they went on strike. They were salvaged. Like the trucks were not damaged. But the concrete was lost. You can't use it after a certain point. Yeah. So that was an actual loss for the company.
Big whoop. And it's crazy because in the things that I read about this, it was framed as if the trucks were damaged.
Yeah. And they aren't. Their trucks are fine.
In some of the wording in the decisions, it was phrased as if the trucks were maliciously damaged.
Yeah.
Like they intended to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the idea is that they're saying the workers intended to harm the trucks or could have harmed the trucks, which is true, but they were saved by people that came on shift and were not striking at the time. So the trucks are fine. The concrete was lost, though, to be clear. And that's where the lawsuit comes in from Glacier Northwest. Basically, they're suing the workers during the strike and the union itself for the value of the lost concrete. Now, if you don't know, typically, the NLRB, which is the National Labor Relations Board, handles disputes like this, anything to do with strikes, the Labor Relations Board. That's the point.
Uh-huh.
That's the point of their existence, according to the whatever federal law was passed,
whatever
like
act
in the 30s.
Established them.
Yeah, yeah. They basically handle all this stuff, but the Supreme Court just ruled, and this is the sticking point, that companies can sue in state courts for lost profit or property damage that occurs during a strike. They don't have to go through the NLRB. And if you don't know, the NLRB doesn't set precedent like the Supreme Court or state courts do.
Uh-huh.
So it's a pretty big deal what just happened here.
What in the Constitution? Like, what is this based on?
I don't know.
Like, isn't that the point of SCOTUS is to interpret everything through the lens of, like, constitutionality and the law of the land and case law and stuff? Come on, like, This is just to shit on people. Like, right. They're just doing bad decision after bad decision.
We've had the NLRB for like 100 years almost. Yeah. You would think the Supreme Court would just defer to them. That's what the state court said. They said, this is not our matter. You need to go to the NLRB. We don't resolve strike matters. This isn't what we do. This isn't the purpose of the court.
Yeah.
We don't set precedent.
We have a whole body
kind of
for that. We have a whole institution set up to do that.
And the important bit now is that the Supreme Court is functionally saying is opening the door to companies that want to sue strikers for any, like I'm going to say, any profit damage that is caused.
Uh-huh.
They want to say it's a bit more narrow, that it's property damage, but of course you can conflate that with various things.
They
want to
say
precedents.
That it's like property damage that you did kind of like on purpose.
Yeah.
Like negligence, really. Right. They want to say that like, okay, you were negligent in doing this when you went on strike, so that caused this property damage that you are now liable for due to your negligence.
Exactly.
But that's fucked because then like, when are you negligent? When are you not?
Mm-hmm.
The very nature of going on strike is going to cause property damage.
And that's the key, right?
Yeah.
Is that the point of a strike is to cause a loss in profits. And if you work for any company, if your job entails items that can go bad, like concrete or food or really anything else that can expire, then can you just not strike?
Yeah.
Because you could be held responsible for the loss of value of those items that went bad because you weren't working with them, right? If you're not serving food because you're on strike with your restaurant workers or whatever, that food's not going to be usable after a while. It can't be saved forever. So can you be sued for that value? And that completely undermines your actual ability to strike because then you got to pay all these lawsuit bills.
It's almost like it's using language of extremes in a way that allows it to be extrapolated further than what's, I don't want to say than what's intended because I don't want to be charitable to the court.
Of course.
But allows things to be extrapolated more generally, right? Because it's like, if you say like, oh, I went on strike and I just smashed all the fucking windows in my workplace. Obviously, that's like, all right, you kind of fucked up there. But that's not really a function of the strike. But if you say, are a restaurant worker and you go on strike and you walk out of your shift, are you now liable for all the food that goes bad if you strike for 2 weeks?
Right.
Are you liable for all of that? Or if you're a maintenance worker and you go on strike and all of a sudden there's a maintenance breakdown.
Right. Are you responsible for that?
Are you liable for it because that was like the function of your job or something like that? Or if a strike is authorized while you're working on a new IT system.
Right.
Are you then fucked if you don't finish it and things like can't get finished?
Yeah.
That's shitty, and that seems like that's where this is going to go, and it's fundamentally bullshit because those things happening are the only power that workers have.
Right, it's directly related to your work, of course.
The threat of food expiring is what would make you want to negotiate with workers.
Precisely,
right. The threat of maintenance worker going on strike when maintenance needs to happen is, this maintenance isn't going to happen, I'm going to lose more money.
And of course there's got to be limitations, like if you can't go in and like burn your workplace down during a strike, like obviously
just to
you'll
be clear,
get charged with that.
For the random conservatives that come in
right,
here
of course, like there's going to be limitations, you can't intentionally like burn a building down, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, if the loss of profit is directly related to your unwillingness to work, then why is it that companies would be able to sue you for the loss in profit? Because that is the point of a strike.
Uh-huh.
You don't have a right to strike at that point, if that's the precedent that's being set, if that's exactly what's going
to
happen.
Like, they need to be careful in doing, well, I guess they needed to be careful in saying that there needs to be actual malice attributed to whatever, like, loss of profit happened. But even then, it gets fucked, because, like, what is malice?
Right.
Can you say that workers are maliciously striking?
Well, yeah, well,
it's
then
the point.
They're going to say that, like, the strike itself, choosing to go on strike, is the act of malice.
Yeah. Like,
because
actually,
that's
you're,
intentional.
You're not going on strike because of actual, like, labor discrepancies. You're going on strike because you don't like me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and we can quote straight from Amy Coney Barrett. She issued the majority opinion on this, where she said, quote, the union's actions not only resulted in the destruction of all the concrete Glacier had prepared that day, they also posed a risk of foreseeable, aggravated, and imminent harm to Glacier's trucks. So she is ruling on the side of the company, saying that they did this on purpose, that they intentionally harmed the trucks and the actual item that was going to expire, the concrete. So, like, it's exactly what we said. Like, you just don't have a right to strike at that point.
And it's also like, okay, do you go on strike and make sure that you get your work done before you, like, you strike?
Right.
Isn't that, like, antithetical to the idea of walking out?
Yeah. You got to check with them first just to make sure it's okay.
Sorry, guys. Can I walk out now? Actually, I need you to finish that report before you go on strike. Oh, you're right, boss.
Yeah. Or I'm going to sue you in state court.
Yeah, my bad.
Also, in Justice Barrett's opinion, she said, quote, the union took affirmative steps to endanger Glacier's property rather than reasonable precautions to mitigate the risk. The conduct at issue was arguably not protected by the National Labor Relations Act, which is the one that passed quite a long time ago.
Oh, the
which
one that established the NLRB.
Yeah.
But they didn't like to defer to the NLRB. Be at first.
Yeah.
They want to cite it without actually fully, you know, engaging with just, the law.
Once again, the conservative justices issuing the stupidest fucking opinion on the planet that, like, I could write a better opinion than.
They didn't have to take up this decision.
No.
They had to have done it again for the love of the game.
Mm-hmm.
For the love of the
now,
game.
The one dissenting justice was Ketanji Brown Jackson. She issued the dissent, and there was some speculation that the two other liberal justices didn't side with her, because if they did, then a more extreme version of the majority opinion would have passed, written by like Alito or Thomas or something like that, Clarence Thomas.
And the majority opinion, is that what determines like the case law?
Right, determines the precedent, which is like, I haven't seen any direct evidence for this, but that's the speculation, which like, if that's the case, fine, because they're going to lose anyway.
You know apparently. What? I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't, and Clarence wrote that opinion.
Right.
You can't strike anymore.
Right. Yeah, you're never getting Clarence Thomas, you're never getting Alito, right? So maybe that's the idea, but we did get a dissenting opinion, and Justice Jackson said in it, quote, "In my view, doing that places a significant burden on the employees' exercise of their statutory right to strike, unjustifiably undermining Congress's intent. Workers are not indentured servants, bound to continue laboring until any planned work stoppage would be as painless as possible for their master." Which is basically what our critique is here.
Because, like, with that, it's like, yeah, there's obviously better times for your employer to strike than other times.
Sure.
But that's not the point of a strike. That's antithetical to what a strike is. You as the worker want to strike at the worst possible time for your employer.
Uh-huh.
Because you want to do that damage. You need that power. You want to push that lever.
Well, and that's exactly my point, is that the more liberal view, right, is that strikes hurt profit, and that's the point, and that's kind of where it ends.
Yeah.
But if we're taking this further to the left, it's this idea that collective action and strikes generally are the only way of workers exercising power over their employers. Uh-huh. Otherwise, they have no leverage. It's their only real way of creating leverage, because the relationship between employer and employee is totally asymmetrical.
Uh-huh.
The employer can do whatever they want. They have all legal power. They are imbued with the power of the state to do
especially
whatever they want
like
to their
workers. Especially in an at-will employment state where they can just fire you for whatever reason.
The only power that employees have is over the profit that they produce through their labor. So by making workers responsible for the loss of profit, they have no means of advocating for themselves. They have no means of flexing power. It does, as Justice Jackson just said, make them into servants. Mm-hmm. You can't do anything at that point.
Yeah.
Like, structurally, you have no power at all if they can charge you for every loss of profit that you cause to them, because then they have no real incentive to bend to you and listen to your needs, right?
Yeah, it's like, oh my God, guys, can I rebel today? No, maybe tomorrow's going to work out better for that.
Yeah.
Can I do anarchy today? No, maybe next week. Once you get these things done, and then we could do that. We'll give you a little more work now so you can make up for not working next week, and then you'll be okay.
Yeah, it does really remind me of like people, the discourse during like 2020, and they were like, if you want to do a BLM protest, you need to ask the police first to make sure they think it's okay. It's like, that's not the point.
I'm going to work with Minneapolis PD to organize a protest.
Like, they're like the problem right now, right?
Like I'm kind of working against them.
Yeah. Now, of course, this isn't the first time that the Supreme Court has sided with business interests over strikers or workers. That's actually the norm throughout history. Yeah. Don't forget, of course, that SCOTUS several times blocked federal legislation to end child labor in this country before it was finally outlawed. But that took quite a while.
SCOTUS is great.
SCOTUS was just in the way for quite a long time. But what really gets to me is like, If we're talking historically, if there wasn't ever property damage throughout the labor movement from the 1800s and 1900s, then children would still be in the coal mines, right?
Yeah.
Like, strikers used to beat the shit out of scabs as they tried to go on the job.
Strikers used to literally go to war.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that people should be hurt in strikes today contemporarily, but like, again, kids would still be in the coal mines had strikers not been that extreme in the past.
Yeah.
And this completely undermines the power that workers have to make things happen.
Without a little bit of labor militancy, we wouldn't be where we are today and enjoy the freedoms that we enjoy today.
Yeah. And like, the fundamental idea is that the whatever property loss is going to happen is infinitely less valuable than the well-being of another human being, right?
Yeah.
Like, obviously the human's more important than whatever property is going to be damaged. And that's fundamentally the take from the left. It's like, I don't care. Like, you could lose hundreds of millions of dollars in profit, but if the trade-off is that workers are just subjected to the worst conditions, then yeah, I want you to lose the money, right? Uh-huh. Humans are more important than the money.
100%.
Yeah.
100% every single time.
Yeah.
It's a bit silly.
And this is minor, but one thing that I saw is that Biden didn't take a side in the Supreme Court case before the decision was released. I think he said it was a bad decision after it came out, but it's like, not that it would have changed
the
outcome.
After you scrolled the TL to find his take.
But symbolically, you could have sided on the workers. Like, you said you're the most union-oriented president. What happened
to
that?
It really doesn't hurt. And this is kind of a big knock against him, especially after the railroad thing,
mm-hmm.
where he's like, I'm going to talk to the CEOs.
Right, because it would have been just like an easy optical dub just to be like, yeah, the workers deserve to be able to strike regardless
especially
of this
because, like, even if you're disingenuous about it, just win those political points.
Precisely.
Again, us out here doing political strategy better than the politicians, you know what I mean? Because it's like SCOTUS is going to rule how SCOTUS is going to rule regardless of your input.
Yeah.
No matter what.
And, like, I know Glacier Northwest Concrete Company is not donating that much to Democrats.
Oh,
like, you can lose them, right?
You're not hurting.
Like, your donor base, the concrete industry. You can afford to lose whatever their donation is going to be.
I don't know, maybe it is the concrete lobby. You never know.
It's just, once again, kind of as we talked about with McCall a couple of months ago, unions already are voting for Democrats, right? And they're already aligned with Democrats. They're the easiest group to just go out and get. All you got to do is show up and advocate for them,
especially because, like, there are so many, like, blue collar workers that are, like, represented by unions that aren't voting Democrat too, and, like,
sure,
you could win those people by doing these good decisions,
right?
Like, you could win these people over if you just, you know, have good takes about labor and don't lie about being the most pro-labor president ever.
It's just another fundamental, I don't know, not even misunderstanding, just an unwillingness to understand how class interests work.
Refusing
to just help people, I guess. I don't know. Like, there's no other way to phrase it. It's just this decision is horrible, sets an awful precedent, and I can only imagine it's going to mean more strikers getting sued for the profit loss they cause.
So that's pretty sick.
Yeah.
Speaking of strikers, though.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of us being pro-labor and things that are pro-labor, right? We're going to be talking about some New York hospital strike that just happened.
Okay.
So while we're on the topic, the first doctor strike to happen in 30 years in New York just happened at Mount Sinai's Elmhurst Hospital, a hospital that serves one of the most diverse communities in the country.
Okay.
Right? Okay.
Let them cook.
130 resident doctors striked for 3 days. They walked out.
Yeah.
Just walked out. Pretty sick, right?
Is it illegal for them to do that? I know
It turns out, so I was reading up a little bit about, like, doctor strikes and stuff just because I was confused. So I thought they couldn't.
Yeah.
Like, I thought things like that couldn't happen. But no, most of the reason why doctors, maybe there are some, like, legal aspects, like when they can do a strike. Mm-hmm. And, like, you can't walk out in the middle of surgery. You know what I'm saying? Like, Hippocratic Oath stuff like that. But most doctors, only 7% of doctors are represented by a union because most doctors work as independent contractors for hospitals.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
So they just contract them out. They're not actually staff, but residents, like doctors in training, are staffed at hospitals. So there are more resident unions. I think there's a vote to unionize at a hospital in Boston, big hospital in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And if they win that vote, it'll represent a record high, like, percent of union membership amongst residents ever.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that's pretty sick.
Yeah,
and that's what happened here. 130 resident doctors had striked for 3 days. And it's pretty sick.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. And basically what they were asking for and what they eventually kind of got, they've been in negotiations for 11 months, was Mount Sinai, same hospital system, like that's the broader system, in Manhattan, just pretty much right there. New York's not a big place, right? Mount Sinai in Manhattan, residents who worked there were paid thousands of dollars more than doctors who worked at Elmhurst, despite being hired by the same people, being within the same hospital system, being within pretty close geographical distance. And they also had additional benefits in Manhattan, like free Uber rides past 8 p.m. like
crazy.
Between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. They got those and, like, a couple other benefits that just the Elmhurst people didn't get. And it's kind of this thing, like, okay, the hospital in Manhattan gets all the good benefits, but the one who serves the diverse community doesn't.
Right.
The one who's staffed by, like, immigrant and minority doctors.
It doesn't
seem
like a coincidence.
That doesn't get the benefits.
Right.
That's kind of bullshit. And they recognized that and they went on and they exercised their right to strike.
Nice.
And it's pretty cool. And it's not like a victory for labor necessarily, but it's a victory in the sense that they're going to inspire for their movements in the future.
Yeah.
The first strike in 30 years and they get what they want.
They did get what they want.
Well, they have a tentative agreement right now. I don't know the exact details, but they did get raises, stuff like that. And I think they got some bonuses attached with it as well.
Yeah. I know some members of our audience have asked us when we were on our live stream, which of course, if we do another one
problematic
soon, come out to it. But a couple of people were talking to us about, like, starting labor movements in their workplace. So of course, be careful, naturally.
Be careful.
And most, keep in mind, of course, that most labored actions, most collective action fails because it's just so hard to be successful.
And it usually takes about a year to organize.
Right. But I do always love to see when they just happen to work out.
Yeah.
In the employer's cave, because they're your enemy.
They are your enemy.
They are structurally opposed to you in terms of your well-being. So, got to fight back. And I like to see it. It's good to see.
I do like to see it. Another interesting thing I read about just like resident doctors and units that they form, I think I read it on the Political article talking about this, was that at Mount Sinai, they actively discourage unionization kind of by paying non-union residents more.
I thought that was illegal.
And that's what I thought.
What the hell?
But somehow they get around with it.
Yeah.
I don't know what exactly it is, but non-union residents are paid more. And usually hospital systems can get away with like curbing unionization efforts just because you're only a resident for 3 to 7 years and there's not like many people. So they just wait it out half the time.
Isn't it strange how conservatives and Republicans will claim to care so much about free speech, but when we see blatant anti-union activity from corporations, for example, like paying non-union workers more than union workers, they don't care. Right. Like you would think that like joining a union is, well, I know this, joining a union is an exercise of your First Amendment.
Yeah.
And they're okay with employers discriminating against you based on your choice to join a union or not. That seems like something that'd be right up their alley to be pissed off about. But it seems like they don't get mad about it because they don't actually care about the First
Amendment. Seems like all of their outrage is mostly just manufactured bullshit culture war issues that aren't designed to manifest in actual policy solutions that help society as a whole.
Right.
But more so to manifest in policy solutions that, I don't know, are against minorities living and more for just rich people to do it and constantly scapegoating minorities.
I do love how anytime they're advocating for the First Amendment, it's like to protect someone's ability to say the N-word on Twitter or something.
Yeah.
Like that, it's always to protect the worst people on the planet. Like, no, Matt Walsh should be able to post what is a woman. That's the First Amendment.
Yeah,
but
that's right.
This worker being discriminated against for joining a union, that's okay. I'm good with that, cool. Actually.
Why are they asking for so much?
Yeah. You know, unions are communism. So,
you know,
and the left doesn't even know what a woman is.
You know, unions can be really corrupt.
Yeah.
So that's why we should get rid of them. Yeah. Nobody else can be corrupt. Nothing else can be corrupt. Just unions, though.
Only the things that help people.
Sometimes unions can be corrupt.
Yeah. What a fun little story. We're only dubs this episode.
Only dubs. Love SCOTUS. Love Congress.
Moving on to our last news story
of the
week. Kind
of funny, just like a last note. All of the, like, arms of government that we've covered this episode just doing bad things.
Yeah.
But the one thing we did cover where workers actually, you know, take a stance and get things back is the good thing.
Yeah. You see where we are aligned ideologically. We're against the state.
I don't hide it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Golly,
yeah.
Bro.
We really did make our way around the federal government today.
We did. What was the only thing we didn't hit? What, we hit the executive?
We hit all of them.
Legislation. Oh my God. And we hit the judicial?
Yeah.
This is
a comprehensive political podcast. We're serious political commentators.
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
The only thing we didn't hit is the globe.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe we got to get back on some geopolitical news. Ooh. Lots of stuff happens in the world.
I'm sure we can find something.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm sure. Oh, I did see something earlier, something about like a Chinese boat got too close to one of our boats.
Oh, great. World War III, maybe?
Yeah, and people are like, oh, this is an act of aggression. I don't know anything.
Armageddon of a different color, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. So maybe we're just going to trade one Armageddon for another. I don't know.
We were right about Armageddon, but just not, we weren't right about the source, you know what I'm
exactly.
saying?
Exactly. It's like the monkey's paw.
Yeah. Well, if we want to talk about some funny news to round out the episode, we got to talk about some election news and cover some potential announcements that might be coming or probably are coming this week.
Confirm some announcements we talked about before and talk about new ones.
Yeah. So first off, I have a headline from NPR that says, quote, Mike Pence expected to announce 2024 run for president. Apparently, some sources close to the evangelical man himself have confirmed that he is expected to announce on Wednesday of this week, June 7th, in Iowa. So
that's
crazy.
Because, like, who is this for?
That's my question, too. They wanted to kill him.
They wanted to kill him? So, like, I would be reluctant because so many people enter races like this just to get a shot at VP.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be reluctant to say that Mike Pence is trying to get a shot at VP
again
considering that it's either going to be Trump or DeSantis.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe my boy Vivek can come through. Like, maybe he can somehow clinch the nomination. But
well, and it's like we knew that Pence was planning to announce for a while now. He's made several stops to Iowa and New Hampshire. Not very subtle, yeah. Right? Like, those are the states you go to if you're about to announce, in the Republican Party right now, at least. But yeah, who's going to vote for him? Nobody likes him.
Yeah, literally no one. Like, who is this for? Like, he yeah. could have retired and lived a quiet life.
Yeah, he's got the money.
The Lincoln Project guys could worship him. Like, weirdly moderate conservatives love him.
Even Democrats.
Like, even Democrats love him. They praise him
for... He stood up.
Doing the bare minimum.
He didn't overthrow democracy, as it
Woo,
were.
Yeah. Let's go. Despite... never mind. This is only a good gay news episode. I won't get into
it. So from NPR, they said, quote, in a November 2022 interview with NPR's Steve Inskeep, Pence said to draw his presidency boils down to a sense of service. He said he believes that people want to get back to policies he and Trump championed during their time in office, a strong military, conservative courts, support for allies, and standing up to enemies. So, like, some normal politicking, I guess.
Trump doesn't like you.
Yeah.
None of Trump's base likes you. Like, who likes you more than someone else?
Yeah.
Because I feel like the people that would like Mike Pence are going for DeSantis.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly right. I don't see any room for a non-Trump or an alternative to Trump lane that Ron DeSantis isn't already, for the most part, occupying. Not that he's doing a good job by any stretch of the imagination, but they haven't really done enough to get around Ron DeSantis as a candidate. And if I were Ron DeSantis, I'd be trying to squash all of them to make it just a 1v1 Trump versus him. That's the only way he can win, right?
Yeah.
Is by getting rid of everyone else. Because they're all occupying that same lane. It's either Trump or not Trump. That's the dichotomy right now.
They're just going to spoil him.
Yeah.
Like, they're just going to play spoiler.
Yeah.
So, like, that's so cool. I mean, I'd love to see him try.
Yeah. Well, for sure. He'll be fun to have on the debate stage.
Gotta commend the effort. I get, like, him and Trump on the debate stage.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck is that going to look like? Yeah. They're like, actually, you know, just touting Trump's achievements.
Yeah. Yeah. So this brings us up to 10 total announced candidates. Plus one guy we'll talk about in a moment brings us up to 11. Okay. But we got quite the field developing here. For some debates
else?
That should be happening in a couple of months.
Yeah.
So that's pretty exciting. The other expected announcement we have this week, though, is Chris Christie, who we've been talking about for a little while.
Oh, my goodness.
Who seemingly has been waiting and waiting for a long time to announce. But NPR reports that his is supposed to happen on Tuesday of this week. He plans to announce in New Hampshire, which is a nice little difference between him and Mike Conversion Therapy Pence. I'm sorry I brought it up.
Sorry, I had to.
It's a part of his character.
It's like his thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
We've all got a thing, and that's his, you know? Can't knock it.
I love how futile all of this is, right?
Like, it just doesn't matter. That's what I was just about to say. Like, Chris Christie, Mike Pence, again, these guys all occupy the same lane. God, I wonder, like, can you, like, embezzle campaign funds or some shit? Like, is that what this is?
Yeah, man. I don't know if they're all just campaigning for a VP spot or they're just trying to hype up a book deal or something.
Can't fucking do that.
Well, Mike Pence can't. Chris Christie can't either because he's promised that he's going to go as hard on Trump as possible, quote unquote.
Oh, sick. And so who's he? Ron DeSantis VP? The DeSantis Christie ticket?
Yeah. Like, that's not going to happen.
He's got two first names. It doesn't work.
I don't know what they're trying to accomplish. It just does not matter. Even like Tim Scott, who again, as we've said before, in a regular political environment, maybe is a real contender in this kind of election.
Rick
but
Scott?
He just isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, Tim Scott.
Tim Scott.
From South Carolina.
Not Rick crazy. Both of them. So, you know.
Both bald men. You know how it goes.
Both Scots.
Yeah. It's so silly. It's so silly. But it's heating up.
There's got to be a way that they can get some money out of it.
Yeah.
Because it costs a lot. Like, it's stressful to run a campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like,
time consuming.
What are they doing? Are they trying to, we're running to bring the right more center. That's not a winning message.
It's not going to win right
That's
now.
That's not a winning message. It's not like you can be like, because like left-wing candidates can come in to like the Democratic primary and be like, yeah, we want to try and, like Bernie, we want to try and force the person who's probably going to win, or Marianne Williamson kind of.
Yeah.
We want to try and force the person who's more likely to win to adopt more like left-wing positions, like actual leftist positions, bring them back.
Yeah,
you can't do that on the right. You can only do that on a right if you're going far right.
Yeah, I don't know what they're trying to accomplish, especially because the two front runners are just about as far right as you can get at the moment, right? Yeah. Ron DeSantis wants to be a Nazi.
They're at the farthest of the right. That's Donald like Trump, nationally acceptable.
Donald Trump was like the catalyst for a lot of the popular right-wing populism we see today. Uh-huh. I don't see how they go like to the left, right? And that's been Ron DeSantis's critique of Donald Trump lately, is he's like, oh, to run against me, Donald Trump has moved closer to Joe Biden, further to the left. I don't know if that's a message that's going to sell to anybody.
No, he's just making fun of you.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is not adopting more left-wing positions. In fact, Donald Trump is adopting your positions, which is the bonkers thing, right? Like, he's adopting the positions that Ron DeSantis popularized through his legislative action in Florida, but he's not moving left. He's just bullying you.
Well, even Trump pushed back on wokeness. Did you see that?
I saw there was some exchange where Trump is like, nobody can define wokeness.
Yep.
And then Ron DeSantis is like, yeah, actually I can.
Yeah, it's black people being in the state of Florida. That's yeah, woke.
Really, really it is. It's me when I have to see, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, you guys know.
You guys.
Throwback to when Ron DeSantis said, don't monkey this up when he's running against a black person. These are the caliber of political opponents we have in the GOP.
How did we get here?
Yeah.
Like, how did we get here?
Yeah, gotta love the historical degradation, or the historical just collapse of capitalism over time, just uh-huh. infesting our culture, destroying everything.
Party Lincoln, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, exactly. Lincoln would have been a Republican.
Oh my God, like, these guys make, like, Reagan look good.
Yeah. I mean, rest in peace.
When it comes to, like, forward-facing policy.
Rest in piss, Ronald Reagan. Yeah, no, not great. So we'll see where this goes. Of course, excited to keep up on it. We always will.
I'm so excited for the debates. Smoke. I'm so excited to see every single person on that debate stage just get walked over by Donald.
Yeah, we definitely got to live stream those.
100%.
As long as, you know, CNN doesn't hit us like a copyright strike or something for doing it.
Because it's like, I can't remember what like the last primary debates were like.
Yeah.
Is it going to be like the Pennsylvania primary? Like the Dr. Oz one we covered?
Bigger than that, for sure.
All 11 people are just like on stage, just 45 seconds to answer. It's just crazy.
For the Democrats in 2020, they did like an upper tick. Well, no, actually, what Democrats did is they randomized it. They had two debates because there was like 20 people at one point.
Wow, okay.
10 for each, and they just randomized it. For Republicans in 16, I want to say they did
Ted
like—
Ted Cruz and everyone and Ben Carson were just all on the stage, right?
I think they did like a top ticket and a lower ticket debate, where the ones that were on the lower one were polling lower, and the ones that were on the one that got viewed more were the higher polling people. I think Democrats randomized it to avoid like any like elitism or whatever. Uh-huh. Not that they did that successfully.
Yeah.
So I don't know how Republicans will do it. They only have 11 people so far, if the announcements happen this week, that will be debating if Trump shows up, of course. So they could probably squeeze him onto one stage. Dude. But.
Nah.
Either way, we're getting Meatball v. Donald Trump if they both go.
Honestly, I'd be so fucking excited for a lower ticket debate.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, obviously, like, the higher, it's the Donald Trump DeSantis, right? Like, that's the one.
That's
to
the main event.
But honestly, I bet there's going to be some wacky, zany, wild stuff that happens.
Vivek will probably be on the lower ticket.
You
right?
think so?
Probably.
I thought he was. I feel like he'll be like polling just behind DeSantis.
Oh, maybe.
Especially because he was PragerU just dropped their like documentary. What the fuck was it called?
I don't know.
It's like Woke Inc. or some shit like
that. Oh, yeah. And they changed their profile picture on Twitter to be like the power fist. Dude, stupid. Like, what
Dennis
are you doing?
Or like some social media manager the other day tweeted some wild shit. I wish I remembered what it was, but because they changed their profile, I thought it was fake.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, this is wild even for you guys to say.
Yeah, when I saw the profile picture, it looked like an Occupy Democrats type profile picture. You know what I mean? It was weird.
Prager use a parody account.
Gotta be.
It has to be.
They say the
be.
Dumbest shit.
But yeah, I was watching.
We can ratio them one day. Help us get there.
Dude, I hope so. That's one of my dreams. Yeah. Ratio them and Ben Shapiro.
Mm-hmm.
I'd die happy. But anyway, yeah, they dropped their new documentary, and in it, like, they have an interview spot with Vivek where they're talking about, like, the book he wrote. I think the book he wrote was Woke Inc.
Mm.
Can't remember what the documentary is called. But anyway, he's going in there and he's like, yeah, wokeness. Really, it's like a, and then he says something unimaginably stupid.
It's like the idea that bad things have happened in the past and they affect today.
He says something along the lines of, wokeness is really, and he's got his little mannerisms, like he's a character. He's a little character. He's one of my favorites. He's a sleeper hit. If you came to the live stream and you stuck around to the end when we were watching that hour-long interview with him and like some libertarian, that was sick.
Mm-hmm.
I would implore you all to go check that out.
I would have ranked him A-tier looking back. Looking back,
he's an A-tier candidate.
He is.
Dude fucks.
Yeah.
I'd say he's way cooler than Ron.
Oh, for sure. He's got like, he's not like that. He's like a billionaire, I think, or millionaire, something like that. He's like an entrepreneur type person.
He started like a biotech company.
Like he's I can follow it. You know what I mean? Like what he has to say, it's just entertaining to watch him.
Uh-huh. And it's like in that PragerU documentary and the clips that I had watched of it in his interview, they were saying they were introducing him and they're like, he was literally working to cure cancer. And the BLM rioters made him exit his position as CEO.
BLM stopped cancer.
Which is crazy because like the story behind it, the actual story behind it is like he founded like a biotech firm, whatever. Everybody and their mother is working to cure cancer.
Yeah.
Everybody and their mother. I could go right now and apply at a fucking as a research tech doing some cancer work, right? Mm-hmm. And I could be, I'm working to cure cancer. It's kind of a bullshit thing.
Yeah.
Like it's a bullshit way to frame things. It's a little too charitable to what he was doing as a CEO of a tech company. But he stepped down because employees at his company were like, "Hey, we should make a statement about BLM, like while things are happening, we should make a statement in support," and he refused to do it.
Oh my!
So he left.
Yeah.
So he left his position.
That's quite the new like racism angle to say that black people stopped the cure for cancer.
that's such an argument. Like what they said, one step removed.
That's what it is. Right?
From black people stopped cancer from being cured.
Yeah, like that's quite the argument. That's a crazy take. Love of the game,
really. Love of the game, dude. He's such a cool guy.
Mm-hmm.
I love him. And in the interview we watched on stream, when they're talking about like immigration, right, and he hits that one line where he's like, the first thing that immigrants did when they come into this country was break the law.
Yeah, that's the classic
it's
argument.
Illegal to cross the border illegally.
And then so the interviewer was like, what about your family?
He said, well, how'd your parents get here?
You also go watch the VOD of the live stream to know what
you only say to the brown candidate.
Yeah.
You're not saying that to the Pole. Mm-mm. You're not saying that to the swarthy German candidate.
The Italian Ron DeSantis.
Oh, true.
You're not.
What are your claims here? Huh?
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think that ends us out on the episode. I hope you all enjoyed the break from the anti-LGBTQ news. We're going to get back on it next episode.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be chock full.
Back and better than ever.
Yeah, you're back on the chopping block. I know many of you in the audience have a staked interest in the slow genocide in this country that's
basically.
So we'll get back on it next week. But want to take a quick break, and we also had tons of other news to cover. So
that's right. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. So it just some of it just didn't fit in neatly.
Exactly.
With what we were doing, you know, the theme of this episode is really just looking through the various chambers of government and their dysfunction.
Yeah. Given that it's Pride Month, if you're going to any like Pride events,
stay safe out
Pride
there.
Rallies, of course, be safe. Don't bring weapons, for the love of God. Don't escalate things like that. Stay safe from the psyops as well. I've already seen posts that are like, minor attracted people need to be included in the LGBTQ, and that is a psyop. Don't fall for it. It always happens.
Don't participate in the bullshit discourse like that.
Don't do it.
You don't need to get on the fucking train. They're just going to use it again. No matter how good your intentions are with engaging in this discourse, you don't need to.
I've never seen any serious political commentator on the left be like, the minor attracted people should be like, nobody.
It's a serious movement.
It is an FBI agent behind the screen.
They're feds.
It's not real.
It's some intern who works at the Heritage Foundation. He made a sock account where he pretends to post as a left winger, and he just goes through and posts the most obnoxious positions possible, the most uncharitable, indefensible things.
Drumming up the worst discourse.
Exactly. It gets people to engage with it, and that's how they do it.
Yeah. But if you're going out to events, if you're participating in the festivities,
stay safe.
Yeah.
Protect yourself.
Exactly.
You know what to do.
And have fun. Of course.
Most importantly.
Yeah. And you know what? Pride started as a protest, so treat it as such.
And if you're one of these special people we're about to name out, have an extra little bit of fun.
That's right. Our patrons.
I hope you enjoy yourselves markedly more.
Beautiful patrons.
Beautiful, wonderful, amazing, gorgeous, kind.
Yeah.
Incredible.
You want to start us off?
Incredible patrons. And I'll start us off here with Cricket Scrapbook Layouts, Nikki Nine Lives, Caden Kraut, Lord T the Radiant, Chris the Postman, Christy Beck, Talia Kotz, 40% Spite, Andrew Harris, Mike Jablinski, Mattias T, Omar Zuno, Clayton LaFed, Mark Yeager, Sarah McRoberts, Dylan B, Kaz, Caleb Joy, Jim Bobs, Carl D, Rich Toro, Tari, Gavin Mayer Maldonado, Hunter W, Fergalaki, Max Vasquez, Jacob Rogers, Colton Mooberry, Fixer Punk, Jim Egbers, Jeff Muzzy, Bagel Burrito, Cincy Alex, Bread, Joe Stenstrom, Adrian Sandoval, Chloe Sam 601, Colleen Cuts, Timothy Espinosa, Gregory Isn't My Name, Veryuk, Jennifer DeVoe, Big Bird Titty, Crawfishin, Benneth Bennington III, Alexia Benanti, Niche, Big Booty Beatdown, Moises T, Sam Maloney, Two Headed Boy, Jeremy Cadwright, Ben Shapiro's Boyfriend, Jonathan Cassis,
Luke O'Shea, Cucker Tarlson, Daniel Jackson, The Word of Microsoft, Jennifer Sines, Aaron's Gundam, Gundams, Darth Father, Aiden Taylor, Corey Chambers, Sewer Snack, Ellie N, Heidi Osgood, John Glover, Weed Thief 69, Devin Hatchard, Retro Mondo, Meatball Minion, Emma the Dude Slayer, Claire McMillan, Breezy B, Elijah Murray, Veronica, aka V, Raxon, Ash Smith, The Grotler, Magic Ian 95, Flower Clown, Jasper Hengaris, Beetlebugs, Three Crows in a Trench Coat, Lonnie Rogers, Slavic and Sapphic, Casey Lynn Kelly, Snake Eyes, AK Gone, Iquana Don, Zach Lation, Info Russell, and My Mom. Thank you all for supporting the show on Patreon. Thank you to all of those that have been with us for 100 episodes.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you to those that have joined recently and got us to 100.
Thank you to anyone who's hopped on this journey at any point.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
Here's to 100 more. Thank you for listening to the episode, and we'll see you all next week.
Have a great week.